Welcome, everybody, to a brand new episode of the Outer Rim News Show. This is the episode for, what's the date, June 14th, 15th, something like that, 2023. Tonight, we're going to talk about Star Wars Outlaws. We might even talk about Star Wars Jedi Battle Scars. That's the name of the book. I can't really remember, but we've all three almost read it. I mean, two of us have read it completely. One has not finished it, but may not, but we'll talk about that too, and a few other little Star Wars tidbits. But before we get started with all that, let's introduce everybody. I'm Ashley Wilbanks, and as always, with me are the two co-hosts with the most. We'll start off with, in order as they appear on my screen, Ray Snedeker.
Hello.
And he will talk like that the rest of the night.
Yes, it's our ASMR episode.
That's what an expensive microphone gets you.
Yes, yes. And also with us tonight is one Austin F. Gordy.
Or Funkmaster.
Funkmaster Gordy.
Or Fogue. Fake Vogue.
Fake Vogue.
Oh, man.
So how was your week, everybody?
Busy. How was your week? How was your weekend last weekend? Because I heard all of us had an eventful last weekend.
My weekend was pretty good. Yeah.
Went to a toy convention?
I went to a toy convention.
I did too.
You did? I saw you there for a few minutes. I'm sorry.
No, I was like sitting there thinking, I'm like, watch, we're probably going to get to see him for a few minutes. He'll have panels to go to, and then we'll, you know, and then we'll get separated. And I mean, that's usually what happens.
Yep, sorry.
Especially because, I mean, you're more ingrained into the convention, and yep, we were mainly there to shop. But no, yeah, it was cool. It just, for the listeners, viewers, we went to Joe Fest last weekend.
Yep, yep.
So that was fun. My one comment, though, I mean, we went through the vendors a good bit. I didn't find anything nothing that was groundbreaking, unless all the good stuff was bought by Saturday. I just didn't see anything that I was looking for. There were a few things that almost hit the mark. Like, okay, for example, when I went in, the main thing I was looking for was I wanted an Asajj Ventress Black Series figure. Mm-hmm. And I wanted some Super Mario Brothers movie toys, some Last Action Hero movie stuff, mm-hmm, you know, and some, you know, if I can find some decent food tray, those old classic lunch trays, I wanted to get one of those. And come to find out, you remember were you there? We found a Batman tray.
No, I was at a panel at that.
Okay. Point. So before we left the convention, they had one of the trays I wanted, which was this 1989 Michael Keaton Batman lunch tray. You know, it's like yellow border, you know, black in the middle, but it was just like exactly what I wanted. But the guy was wanting but it was a little steep. And when at first it looked great, but when I got closer and picked it up, it had like some little bit of rusting. It was dirty. I mean, there was some stuff I saw I could probably clean it off and it would have been fine, but it was beat up, you know, a little bit. I mean, not terribly, but it was dented up a little bit. One of the legs, like the one of the bolts holding it in was, because there's like two per I don't know.
Yeah, I know.
Probably four total on each leg.
Yeah,
that folds out. But there was like one bolt out, so it was kind of sharp and sticking out and loose. It just felt like very, I don't know. I had to pass on it. So, I don't know. I mean, hey, we found some good stuff. And Last Action Hero apparently must be very collectible because, you know, I found some figures, but it wasn't what I needed. But they did have a car that I wanted, and the daggum thing was almost $100 in the box.
Yeah.
I went, wow. Yeah, well, I was just expecting it to be the 40s range, like 30 to 40, maybe 50. But I'm like, wow, that was big. But then, yeah, the Star Wars stuff, they had pretty much everything I see everywhere else.
Did you pick up that? I know you, when you were going through the comics, you pulled Star Wars droids from Star Comics, you know, the old Marvel.
I should have, and I didn't. The only reason I didn't was because I ran out of cash, and plus I had already grabbed several other comics. I should have grabbed it. They had a couple of different like copies. I had seen like two or three of issue number one. I should have, because I mean, I just love the droid, but
yeah,
I don't know. I had already grabbed Indiana Jones, Raiders of the Lost Ark movie tie-in too. So I
gotcha.
I thought that was a pretty big find. And then the Batman movie adaptation, I found that, you know, on paperback. I mean, it was.
Yeah, I saw it when you got that.
Yeah, but it was just like they, in terms of toys for me specifically, just what I was looking for, they just seemed to not have it. But like I said, I thought maybe I just missed out. Now, I did see a really nice Ewok, you know, classic, 82, 83 when they came out?
Yeah, the village.
Ewoks the Ewoks. Remember in the box?
The plush. Ewoks,
the plush. Yeah, they had a plush that looked really good still in the box for like, I think, 300. Three or 400 or something like that. But it was nice to look at. I mean, every time I see you droids, Ewoks and all that, I'm nostalgic. They even had, one vendor. I took a picture of it. Maybe I can even show this on the screen somehow, but one vendor did have this. They had a classic.
Oh, that's Wicket.
Yeah, and I mean, pristine. Look at that. That is beautiful.
So let me guess. He wanted.
I have no idea. None of these had prices, so I assume north of 200.
Oh, yeah, that easy.
I just thought easy.
I would think 1,200.
Could be in that condition. Yeah. It was just, beautiful, beautiful. I just wish they would do a reissue of it, like a recreation of these instead of the, I want the ones that are coming up in the, are coming up in the box set, but even if they did a reprint of this, man, would be great. I love it. And Ray, what did you think of the Legos that I sent you? That was like a setup of one of the vendors where the Legos was just surrounding him.
God, you remember that was insane. Yeah.
It was just like, I'm like, God.
Let me pull you back up here. Show it.
Yeah. Again. I'm just like, that was
Jesus.
He had a.
Oh, that's the minifigures. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just a ton of minifigures.
Yeah. I was going to say, sorry. Trying to.
It's like a mecha.
Damn it. But I'm like, dang, dude. He was surrounded. So I thought that was really cool. I was hoping to find an Asajj. That was kind of like my big hope. I thought I would find it, but never saw her. I was trying to think of, I feel like there was something else Star Wars themed that I saw that was really, really cool, but it's slipping my mind at the moment.
Well, I mean, I saw lots of vintage figures and vintage playsets and ships. I mean, they were everywhere, just like normal.
I really want an Ewok Village vintage set.
Yeah. And there was even some carded, like vintage carded stuff, some graded stuff that was like super high priced that,
this year it felt like some stuff was like, ooh. But at the same time, the other stuff like comics and things was really cool because you could haggle and you could make deals and stuff, especially when you were buying in bulk. We were able to take care of a lot of stuff.
Yeah, I haggled. I haggled a couple of times. Well, what was your big event, Ray? You said you had a big event.
Oh, I did?
Well, I probably put him on blast, but he told me he got to see something really cool.
We went and saw Transformers Rise of the Beast, but we saw it in Pooler's World's Tallest IMAX.
Is that a good theater?
That was my first time, because I'd been in there. Like, regular when we were IMAX. Walking into the theater, my wife and I thought, like, yeah, we've been to see the IMAX before. Like, I forgot that. No, we've only been in the regular IMAX. Yeah, and they have another one. I think it was built more recently, wasn't it, Austin?
So, yeah.
Yeah, this is fairly new.
Yeah, it's like, the world's tallest IMAX. Swear, it was like going through a theme park line to find my way to the actual theater. Like, they have a whole back area section just for foot traffic to get to that theater. Oh, just wow. For one theater. It's like a whole giant room with its own elevator, with stairs, escalators, all to get to this big giant theater room. And the theater room itself is huge. It reminds me of like walking into one of those, you know, when you've been to like, you know, at like Universal Studios, when you kind of get a look at what some of those rides look like, say like the Simpsons rides, if you kind of look out to the side, you can see all the tons of people that are like stacked up all around you.
Yeah.
And you're just got the giant screen in front of you. That's what it felt like. You walk in and it's like, oh wow, I'm kind of in part of like a theme park ride almost.
But you got enough room in front of you, behind you, all that stuff.
Yeah, yeah. We got
cramped.
No. I mean, the only part is probably has to do with us probably getting older too. Because we got seats that are kind of toward the back, but it was so dark inside. We were like cautiously like, okay, where do we go? And I started like looking around. I felt like an old person. And I found like, oh, there are the letters for the row we're on. So we start like going up, finding the seats. But not as roomy. Once we found our seats, you know, got our kind of little base set up. It was nice. It was a great, like, it was a really fun experience. She had a blast. She'd been waiting for this movie ever since she heard like Unicron was part of the plot.
Yeah.
And she like, for like, probably the rest of the night, she was giddy. Like, she was so happy after that.
Was it good? Was it a good movie? I mean,
it was fun. Yeah, it was a really fun. I had a fun time watching it. It's probably the most fun, like, fun and not stupidly Michael Bayish.
Right. Because, it's a sequel to Bumblebee, right?
Yeah, yeah. It feels like, I really wish they would just, because they keep trying to, like, play this thing, like, oh, yeah, we still got some years before the Michael Bayish stuff. I was like, just say you're different. Screw trying to be part of that continuity, because it's so jumbled as it is. Just start over. You're having fun, and the story was fun, and they didn't do the stupid Unicron thing that they did in the last night where they made Earth Unicron.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, Unicron did look pretty awesome. Like,
wait, was that Unicron was in?
Unicron's the giant planet transformer.
Was that the one in Last Night? That's right, The Last Night. The Last Night was the weakest one of like the Bay movies. It really felt like it looked great. It was shot. I remember seeing that one in IMAX, and it was like, it was shot great.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a sucker for the night sequences. It made me feel like, man, Michael Bay, you need to just make a night movie. Like, just make a medieval fantasy movie. Like, you know, not tied to an IP.
He almost did. It was called King. You know, he kind of did. He was a producer. No, he wasn't a producer. It was Jerry Bruckheimer. I was thinking King Arthur is probably kind of close to Gerard Butler. Clive Owen.
Clive Owen. That, well,
yeah, Keira Knightley, I would make the same.
Yeah. Don't you do it? No. But no, I mean, it's yeah, no, I definitely want to see it. It looks great, and we just haven't even seen Bumblebee yet, so I feel like I need to watch that. I'm so,
you don't have,
I'm so
to.
Behind.
You don't, yeah, okay. I still haven't seen the Bumblebee movie, and felt like I caught on, you know, I think they made one mention of maybe the events of Bumblebee. It's just Optimus saying like, "Oh yeah, you were with that one person for a bit, B." But
yeah.
You know, we got other stuff going on.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think in terms of story and stuff, it was the funnest one I've had out of all the Transformer movies I've watched. Yep. The most fun. The action was really fun. I loved the leads that they had. Like, I liked their both of their leads, Noah and Elena were their names.
I was gonna say, I know that they didn't seem to be very well known actors; they were more like lesser known. But it seemed to me like the movie was gonna focus more on the Transformers anyway. So
I mean, they still have their human stories, because the budget can only cover so much when it's live action and you got giant robots around. So, but they gave them, but they had better. I liked their storylines more. Like, I even like these characters right off the bat a lot quicker, because they didn't looking back, Sam probably wasn't the strongest they could have done for a character. They could have done a little bit more with him. Instead, he's just like the nerdy, you know, he's a nerdy horny kid who wants to get a car so that he can get a girl.
That was Michael Bay.
Yeah. And then, Megan Fox, and then later on Rosie Willie Huntington, they were literally just eye candy. They didn't really have plots of their own. That was a great change of pace. And this one was, both characters were good. Like, I won't say they're, you know, supremely fleshed out, but their motivations, their, you know, base characters, they were really good. Like Elena, they didn't try to sexualize or anything. And, you know, he maybe try to do any forced romance between them. And they had good chemistry together. Like, they played off each other pretty nicely, but they didn't try any romance, which was a relief also. So it was a really fun movie.
Nice.
Plus, there's a secret at the end that I don't know if y'all know about, but there was something that happened.
I've seen it.
Oh, you saw it?
Yeah, I was going to say, I was going to bring that up to you, Ashley, because I thought you might be happy about that.
I went and saw it Friday.
Yeah,
last Friday.
The G.I. Joe.
Did you freak out?
A little bit.
That was a nice twist. That was like, holy crap.
Yep.
Dang, I'm surprised you didn't let that slip to me when you saw me.
I didn't know if you were going to watch it, so.
I hope to. I mean, I'd like to, but no, I'll tell you though, and I'm speaking of the IMAX, I still to this day had such a great experience with Force Awakens in IMAX. Like that was
that,
oh
regular,
my God.
Well, I guess this was before,
this was before they built the world's tallest. We went to the IMAX there. It was the same theater. And we got on the news that night and everything. It was for the premiere, but Jesus, I love seeing those events especially with Star Wars, where the fans are cheering at all the right moments. And, and it was that particular movie, it was such a fun ride. So yeah, I could just imagine.
And then it said,
Here's another great thing about Rise of the Beast. You didn't have to spend 3 or 4 entire minutes justifying why the boyfriend of the main character's daughter is justified in dating a minor. To the point that he carries around a card that explains the Romeo Juliet law so that he can feel good with himself about dating a minor.
Jesus.
Who approved that and thought, man,
Michael Bay is a fan of Seinfeld and a fan of like Larry David stuff. So he's like the minutia of his life. He goes, I remember this time where I was like, I was being so pervy. I had to carry around a card proving to people that my relationships were, and then he's like, put this in a movie. I want to normalize it.
What's
like,
that all about?
Michael, that just sounds like you're a predator, Michael. Anyways, back to Star Wars.
Let's transition here. So we all have read this book, I've read most of it, not all of it. Star Wars Jedi Battle Scars, which is a kind of a prequel to Star Wars Jedi Survivor. Mm-hmm. Is that the name of it?
Yeah.
They're all getting confused in my head.
So it's Fallen Order, then you get Battle Scars between them, and then you get Jedi Survivor.
Okay, good.
Which, have you played the game, or have we talked? We haven't even gotten
we haven't
talk
even
about
talked
the game,
about it.
Right?
I beat it. I beat it last week.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm sure y'all have already beat it.
Yes, we actually just beat it for the second time.
Oh, well, look at you. Let's.
Well, no, it surprises me because I'm like, we finished it. I'm like, all right, so are we moving on to
Temple of Doom.
No, I was about to say that. The new Zelda game, the Tears of the Falling, Tears of the Kingdom or whatever. Anyway, I thought we were going to move on to something else, but it was just that great of a game. I'll go ahead and say it right now. The second game, Jedi Survivor, is so good that both me and my wife were like afterwards, we're like playing Zelda, and then she stops. I think she just was like, when we're going to go back to Zelda, it's like, you want to play some more Jedi? Like, you want to just like, start over? Like, yeah, I wouldn't be mad. And then we just started playing it, and then boom, we're halfway into it again. So but anyways,
well, somebody give a synopsis of this book, Jedi Battle Scars, and what it does.
I'll be professional at first.
Okay,
give the actual story of what the story is. So the basic story is the crew of the Mantis. So
well, before you do that, who's it written by? Let's
oh, okay. This. So this is written by an author. I didn't know much about her before the book. I found out about her afterwards. but her name is Sam Mag. She's written some stuff for some Marvel comics, I believe, like some Captain Marvel, I believe.
Yeah, I hadn't heard of her. So
it said, yeah, Marvel Action Captain Marvel, and it was the Unstoppable Wasp built on Hope, Tell No Tales, and Marvel Spider-Man.
Yeah, so she's done.
That's the video game. So she says she's worked on Marvel Spider-Man. I remember
She was a writer for the City That Never Sleeps DLC. So the stuff, DLC that was involving Sable. Yeah.
So this was. Yeah. When I didn't know anything about her either. And then after I read the book, I had seen her and reading her credits. Mm-hmm. It's another one of those like authors where I thought I was so old and behind the game. Like I thought, oh, well, people must really know her because I'm saying, you know, she seems to have like real legit credits because I'm like, I didn't know who in the heck she was.
And well, she was also a writer for the remake that is currently in development hell for Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic. She was on their writing team for a while. But she left before the cancellation even happened. I think she was on for maybe like 8 months or something, 8-9 months. And then
didn't she also claim to written the story for Ratchet and Clank Rift Apart? And then that something I think went down behind the scenes there and she was fired from the project or she quit the project and then they took her credit off of it, but it's pretty much she wrote the story or something. I could be getting that a little bit wrong, but I feel like she has some sort of writing or some sort of credit to I think the latest Ratchet and Clank game. She's definitely not, got a comic book and video game background.
Yeah, because I'm not trying to go on like a hit piece rampage or anything about her because I want to just take the story as it is.
Yeah.
Sam Meggs is the author and this basic story is, you know, the crew of the Mantis by the end of Jedi Fallen Order is, you know, Cal Kestis, Seer Junda, Grease, and Marin.
Yep.
So this takes place they're kind of fuzzy on the dating.
This one, that was one thing that frustrated me was throughout the book, I'd keep trying to figure out, is this a year after? Because it seemed like it was only a year.
The thing is, they'll keep saying throughout, they'll pepper the word in years. We've been doing this for years. We've been together years. So that's where it gets fuzzy because you don't know exactly how many years. So I'm going to take a guess and think maybe 2 to 3 years. This takes place, and then that still leaves about a 2.5 to 2 years before Survivor, where everybody splits off. That's my guess, but at this point, what happens in what happens in Battle Scars is they go on one of their missions to take on the Haxian Brood. I think they're trying to get off the back. So that's kind of following up a little bit on stuff that happened in Fallen Order. Because, you know, Haxian Brood was one of those little side villains that was after Cal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's a fun start.
Yeah. So
promising start.
Yeah. I mean, you think that, but the proof.
That's what I'm saying. I'm saying like we're jumping in. That's how I was. I was like, all right, cool. We're jumping in with the Haxian Brood and all that,
So in that, there's a storm. So it turns out stormtroopers are also hanging out there, and they decide to. I think they blow up the whole base, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
Sometimes the prose kind of messed me up where I really could not tell what the heck was going on half the time. But anyways, they blow up the base. But before they do, this one stormtrooper stops Marin from killing her. And turns out it's this girl, this Kashyyri. Kashyyri, is that the race name or species? They're purple people with...
I can't remember.
I think it's Kashyyri. She wants to go with them, and she says she's not with the Empire, and they take her, and she brings an offer to them to get this potentially game-changing MacGuffin device that could really be a big benefit against the Empire. And Marin falls in love with her somehow really, really, really quickly. I mean, that's the big synopsis of it is they go to do that. and the fifth brother shows up. Here's my big synopsis of this story. It's called Star Wars, the story where stuff just happens. It just happens. There's no setup sometimes. Stuff just happens. Sometimes stuff just gets repeated ad nauseum. Like, oh, you have somebody talking about something, and then all of a sudden, a few pages later, that same somebody else will bring up that exact same point again. It's like, we already talked about this, didn't we? Why are we talking about it again?
Because you have to.
Apparently. So, this is, for me, and like I've said this to Austin before when we've talked about how my feelings on this book, because I have not nearly read a fraction of the books that probably either of y'all have read in terms of all the Star Wars library, like, you know, current canon and expanded universe. I've not read a fraction of that. That being said, of what I have read, this is probably hands down the worst I've read, and not in terms of story. I mean, there are problems with the story itself, but the prose was the worst part for me. Like, the way, I don't know, for me, there's a rhythm, there's a cadence that comes with good prose. Mm-hmm. And this one just did not have it. Like, sometimes the way she would write, I feel like halfway she would get done with this little clever part. I feel like she just said, like, she's just looking at herself thinking, man, that's a good one. They're going to love that line. So that's what I would get sometimes. And you don't want to feel that when you're reading a story, because you want to flow with it. You want to get oh yeah, that is good, and just keep on going. So I don't know. Maybe it's just, I writing and stuff was my, major in college.
Yeah.
So, I do get a little bit analytical sometimes when it comes to reading stuff. So I really didn't like the prose, and the story would be great. Or, no, I wouldn't even say it'd be great, because not enough happened. There's literally that. It's literally just, we got this girl, her and Marin get busy for a while.
Mm-hmm.
But it's literally just that. We go to a prison, we fight, then we have this thing that happens that ends, and then that's it.
That was sort of what wrapped up to my part. Part of like my complaint with that, like saying that nothing happened, it was like
I wouldn't say nothing happened. It's just like,
well, it was like you said, it was poor setup too. Like they really didn't. It was like, I like the like you said, the beginning. We start off in it. It was like she had this storyline already together, but or maybe she it was like she couldn't fill in the pieces or like just her. Her style is great. It was like Haxian Brood, mission. We jump in with the Imperials and we find out about the MacGuffin to get the Shroud, this mysterious weapon that we could use against the Empire. To me, these were all great little thread ideas. Mm-hmm. Like you said, I was like, these parts I was intrigued with, like, okay, well, where is this going to go? And then it would get slowed down with the romantic stuff. And I'm like, okay, whatever. Like, it just got weird, like out of character, kind of just schlocky, where the author had to finally go and sweating, and like
she was in a fugue state there. she wrote while in a fugue state. She was
right, like, yeah, exactly. And it's just, and it would fall through like that sometimes. And then I liked when the fifth brother came in, because it made it feel like what they were stumbling on was a big piece, okay, this is bigger than them. And it's always that thread of the game where they are only a little piece of that big cog that's moving, which is the Skywalker saga.
Yeah.
What's actually happening. And they, I don't know. Like you said, it just didn't pay off. I wish they had explored that MacGuffin a little more, and that the Shroud and all that.
Yeah.
And it wasn't explored. And to me, it was a cheap way kind of to bring in the fifth brother for the action portion of it. And to me, I felt like her action when she got to that was okay, but I felt like she was just, like you said, she was in her head all the time thinking like, oh, that sounded great, yeah, or like, I can't wait to get to this, and like she would,
that I would say that, and that could almost be a problem too with writing, is when you can tell, it almost feels like you can tell what parts an author is much more interested in writing than other parts, because they'll kind of, it seems like stuff will really fly with a really fast pace on the stuff that's, you know, that they probably don't want to be on because they're trying to get through to the next stuff. And then stuff will go with a little bit slower pace on, you know, and they'll be hyper focused. And I don't want to say that it's just crap. I mean, it'd be very easy to say, but I will say that there are glimmers of grace. Sometimes, like, and I would even say it, like, I would even approach my office, like, where was this writing throughout the other 80% that I've been reading? Like, this was a great passage. What the heck? And, you know, there are glimmers, not enough for me to raise my rating on what I'm
doing. Yeah.
Because I finished it and I gave it a 1 star. I mean, and I'll say that truthfully, I would not give it 0 if that was an option. I wouldn't say it's worst Star Wars story I've read, but I won't give it 0. Because like I said, there were glimmers of good writing in there, but it wasn't enough to really bring it anywhere. But the biggest problem is, for me, and I'm going to be very careful with how I approach this, because it's not for the reasons that it may sound like, but her approach to the romance of Marin and Fret through the Kashyyyri girl that they meet.
You go, girl.
I wasn't a fan of how it was handled. That being said, I have no problem with it actually happening. That was, you know, I'm really impressed and, you know, glad that they tried to take that perspective and, you know, of trying to.
Or have a queer story in Star Wars, or a love story, you know.
And that, and there's part of the problem is that I never felt convinced that they were actually it, because they try to make it so much, it was so much passion, but they was always talked about. And there's a big rule when you're writing, like, this was drilled into my skull ad nauseum throughout, like, my early writing classes. Show, don't tell. That's a big, huge, like, that's a big thing you're taught, you know, even in screenwriting stuff, it's always show, don't tell. And that means you don't just, you know, kind of announce, you kind of work with, the medium that you're in to get the point across. You don't just say the point, you get the point across other ways. And it always felt like she was just telling me that they had this connection, but there was no setup to show where that connection came from, because literally we just see Marin just kind of staring like she's got a crush on already. We don't really get to see them get to know each other. It's just all of a sudden they're in the back room and they're making out. That's it. I never really felt like I never felt like the pacing or the writing for it was handled well enough to convince me that they had the connection that the story keeps telling me that they have. I think that's my big problem with it. I didn't feel convinced.
And that talks into the point I had about Fret. With it. Did you feel that that character was kind of not the pixie
what do they call that?
Yeah, not that, but a version of that, you could say, where, you know, because they're that version's you that character's usually like a girl that comes in and fixes you in some way, right? Is that kind of what it is? Yeah, it's like sort of a broken girl, but that fixes the guy or something like that.
The concept of the manic pixie dream girl is just a cliche type of character that got really popular. I'd say, you know, I would say it almost traces back to like some Audrey Hepburn stuff, if you think of what's her name, Breakfast at Tiffany's, she's a good early version of that. It's just basically the girl who lives by the seat of her pants. She's, you know, she lives by her own rules. You know, everybody in society is just not seeing the world the right way, you know, and she exists mainly to open the protagonist's eyes, like, oh, wow,
Thank you.
I can run instead of walk down the sidewalk?
Wow. Right, so Fret felt like a version of that character, because it was like I know you want me, and I'm here to awaken you, because I know spiritually you've been waiting for me.
Okay.
That's where it got very forced and creepy. And it didn't feel fleshed out. Like you said, it just happened. You're just telling me. You're saying
it'd be great if it was better handled. I feel like it wasn't well handled. Like
maybe if you could handle that situation, or maybe just write a better situation, a better story. I don't know.
Well, to me, I mean, it doesn't even flow correctly, right? Mm-hmm. From the end of the first game, mm-hmm. because there's this little hint there that there's something possibly happening between Marin and Cal Kestis.
Oh yeah.
Which leads into the next game, which follows up
in Survivor.
Yeah. But here it's just like they take a left turn with everything. Yeah. And they've been together.
It's like Marin, the college years.
But they've been together.
And that's kind of offensive in a way, isn't it?
But what I'm saying is, you know, the book says they've been together for years mm-hmm. or on this ship, which they should have a stronger connection. Mm-hmm. But when the Jedi Survivor starts, he hadn't seen Marin in like
a few years.
Well, that's why I feel like the book felt like it was closer to the first game. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, like a year or so, but probably two years after the first game, then not long after this book, after the events in the end, because the thing about the book is you do see how Grease loses one of his arms.
Yeah.
Which the fifth brother.
That's probably the biggest thing that you would need to read the book to find out about.
I was on reflection. I was like, you know, that was like the biggest thing that going forward to the thing is that, yeah, he's like, guys, that guy got me. He was mean.
So how did he lose his arm? I didn't get there.
It's the fifth brother. Partly Seer's fault, because she's fighting him because he was about to kill Cal. She shows up and she's giving him a run for his money. Mm-hmm. And then she just like, she's like holding him against the wall. She's trying to like strike a bargain with him for his soul. Basically like, I'm trying to help you here. Mm-hmm. And I think she gets distracted by Grease walking in or something like that. And he knocks her aside and he runs at her, is about to kill Seer, and Grease jumps in the way, and his arm just sliced right off.
Okay.
That's what I'm saying. Like, all the good stuff happens in the back end of the book. It's like you got to get through all the mushy stuff and all the craziness, and then, like, actual stuff happens at the end, and then it's done.
Does it set up the stuff, like, the story about why, at the beginning of the game, Cal's by himself?
No.
That's another problem that we get at. It's because the end point of it, it kind of feels like things are just kind of back, like the end of a TV episode. Things are kind of back to the status quo, but introspectively, the characters kind of aren't at the status quo because things feel different for them now. And
there's an unsafetiness now which kind of leads into the game where it was like by the end it broke the family up because of there was no stability anymore, you know.
But was Seer gone to
not yet she Jedha? By the end of it they're kind of in an agreement of we agree that we disagree about how we're going about this, about what is our purpose on this ship, almost kind of, because did they really come to an agreement about anything? Because
not really, because at first they were in agreement that we're sticking it to the Empire and we're doing all this.
Cal wants to take down the Empire. That's all he can think about. And Seer, she's wanting to continue a legacy. She wants a legacy to continue for the Jedi. She doesn't want the Jedi to just go out like a candle. She wants something to keep burning. And it does seem like this is the first steps toward where we see her in Survivor.
Yeah. But, and also, because you saw how she was, you know, she almost went to the dark before, mm-hmm. and that influences her character, which I like that part in the book. It influenced her character because she was so hell bent, like just bound and determined that she was going to save the fifth brother. like you are, like, you have got to listen, like a, like an addict, like, you've got to listen to me. Yeah. And he's just like, he's like, get your hands off of me. It was just so crazy how she couldn't turn him. She could not turn him.
Well, I think they mentioned afterwards too, that it was also kind of her PTSD from Trilla.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
That losing Trilla like that, she had that guilt of like, I got to try to save one of them. I couldn't save her. Maybe I can save him. And he, like, you get like,
it's like, babe, I don't want any kind of saving at all. Like, I love this hat. Okay. I love the hat I'm wearing.
I inject the Kool-Aid into my veins every morning with my Wheaties. He's a goner. He's got no thoughts about, like,
but other than that, it's like, then it just kind of abruptly ends with them sort of, it's sort of like it ends with them all kind of, it's sort of like they're the events in the game is the start. It's almost like the start, the crack that starts to form in the armor.
And
that finally somewhere later on a better book would or a better game or something would be written or created to give you that ending story of how they were all shattered. But I did like how they in the game you had those flashback moments. It sort of felt like they were closer to the time period of the game of the book book. So
I feel like writing and character wise, I feel like they did a bit of a disservice to Marin. And at times I would feel like she's almost, I don't know, like she doesn't really have agency for herself. Like she stays so good, like so many times throughout like the story, she's angry or she's googly-eyed about Fret so much of the story to where it really feels like she really doesn't have much, you know, layering to her as a, you know, as a person, as a character, other than that, because that's all that we really get a good focus on is either she's angry and ready to kill someone, like when she's about to fight, or she's like, oh, I can't stop thinking about Fret. She's my soulmate. You
know, well, the thing is, they depowered her at the beginning of the book, and it wasn't at the end of the first game.
Yeah, or they kind of say it was like, I guess they were kind of trying to hint that she'd been having, I guess, PTSD after the events, like, and the, you know, it's kind of affecting her. She was Spider-Man 2-ing.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
Pretty much. It's like, I'm so hurt that like my webs don't go anymore. So. And that in itself isn't bad. Like I don't like the idea, the concept there of, you know, her having a mental block that's messing with her abilities and Marion and Fret being this key to kind of helping her get over it is a great concept. It just was not handled well. It was really handled poorly.
Yeah.
It handled it in a one star fashion.
Well, yes, and I agree with Ray. I'd probably be a little bit nicer. I'd give it about a 2 stars for the sum of the story, and for the back nine.
I mean, but, I can give you notes. I took notes sometimes.
Yeah, I was going to say. I do. I will say though, when I read it, it did feel very like amateurish, and I hate to say that. Maybe that's a strong word. It just felt like when I was reading it, it was definitely not a seasoned writer. It felt like almost like a young person writing it, a very young person.
And, well, I could also say I do think because of what we see in her credits, I think this might be her actual first novel. Yeah,
maybe.
And like that begs the question to me of like, you go with a person who this is their debut novel.
Yeah.
Why did you trust this person enough to write a full, like, it almost feels sometimes like she struggled to reach the page length that they got because it seems like it was like, sometimes it felt like writing was just padded there to just lengthen the page.
Yeah. It could have been, you never know. You don't know what goes on behind the scenes with, you know, when a deadline has to be met and
I mean,
we don't know what goes on behind the scenes in terms of hiring.
I'm not gonna get into that.
But we're not gonna get into it.
I'm not gonna like get that, into that because that's gonna be that could that's be a whole something. Can of worms if you want to just
you never know
about her. Okay, so let's segue into the main topic for the night because we've talked a lot about Battle.
Well, let's keep it up. Girl power. We're gonna be more girl power.
And now we're
well. Actually, I was going to say Ray gave that a no, no, girl.
No, no, girl. No, no, girl.
But now we're going to a you go, girl.
All right. So this past week, we got a look at the brand new or the upcoming game, Star Wars Outlaws, from what company is it?
This is Ubisoft.
Ubisoft,
Massive, that's right. Massive Entertainment, I believe.
That's right.
Is the developer. Yeah.
This is supposedly an open world game that featured the main character as a smuggler. And it takes place in between Empire and Jedi, or is that right?
Well, it looks like it's right on the cusp of Return of the Jedi. So I would say it would within the probably 6 months. I would say before Return of the Jedi.
And they let you know in the trailer because you see Han Solo in carbonite
being delivered to Jabba.
Okay. I didn't even see it.
Quick, but yeah, you do see it.
Well, let's take a look at the trailer. I'll pull it up right quick. And we will get this.
Can I say this though? Did anybody, when you heard that this was open world, did you wonder if it was just going to be one planet and you would just be a big explorer? And I was wondering, I'm like, is this going to be? And then when they revealed, I screamed. I was like,
I think we'll get into that too, like, because I do have my thoughts on that. But yeah,
it was very No Man's Sky-ish. Is what it felt like to me. It was definitely taking notes or taking cues from that, but go ahead.
Okay, so I'm gonna start it. If at any point you want me to stop it, just tell me. We'll go ahead and play it.
These are dangerous times. At least that's what I hear.
We play on
the Empire. They're everywhere.
Oh,
that looks good.
All the good. I'm telling you, the graphics of this game. See, here it is, right there.
Oh yeah. Okay. I didn't
even see, it was real quick though. I mean, it was real fast. The Sullust. You saw Sullust there.
Yep.
I wonder if we'll get to go there.
I want to survive. I have to play their game.
Oh, I love the design of this creature too. I want one.
Nix, I think is his name.
Look at
looks
him.
Looks like I'm all in.
Like, his face is very based on Axolotl.
She's in here somewhere.
On second thought, I'm out.
Pause it. That moment right there, I love when she said, like, on second thought, I'm out, and she just grabbed the coins and shoved them in her pocket. Yeah. That's now what's like. I smiled and just like I had like I was thinking of like Uncharted. That felt like a full Nathan Drake move, and I love that.
But yeah, it kind of reminds me of a Han Solo move.
Yeah, that too.
You know.
Yeah, no, this is definitely a promising character.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There she is.
A speeder bike or a swoop or whatever you want to call it. Whatever we want to consider this.
My whole life. And now I just need a chance to finally be free.
This right here. This part.
Okay.
Get off my ship, Jalen.
Give me a chance. You're going to have to trust.
Now, go back a little bit. Start that reveal again, because the way they play that reveal is like, this is supposed to be important. Keep going back. Keep going back to the where you see the ship.
Where you see the ship. Okay.
Yeah. Right. There you go. This reveal is like telling you that this character is important.
Yeah.
Wherever that takes me.
I'm here to offer you a way out, okay?
Get off my ship, Jalen.
Pause it.
Give me a chance.
Does that look like a particular character to you, Ashley?
Yes. I mean, I know exactly who it looks like, but they've already said it's not
him. It's not. Okay. I was going to say it most likely isn't, but God, if it don't look like him, even down to the way, I don't know if that's a cape thing.
I think it's a cape.
It's like doing it. But it's like, it just looks like it's almost an homage to him. But God, mm-hmm. if they call him to be
Kyle,
just an undercover Kyle, because it would make sense, because, you know, he's part of, you know, what, Imperial Intelligence. And
it could be, yeah. I mean, it could be they're just throwing us off too by saying it's not
Palpatine. But it also would make sense if they didn't want to really go that route because of it being like somebody else's character and IP and all that. Like, they don't want to reuse characters, but that would be cool anyway. It's weird how they make that. They were really focusing on that reveal. Like we're supposed to know who Jalen is. Oh, I got his CDs. Oh,
Jalen.
Anyway, go ahead. Sorry.
You're going to have to trust me. It'll be dangerous, risky. But if you pull this off, you'll never look over your shoulder again.
Yeah, Ryder, that looks so cool.
Now, is that the planet from Rise of Skywalker?
That's what it looked like to me, too.
Okay.
Talking about...
It's the planet where Zori Bliss was. I forget.
Yeah. Oh, God. Why am I blank? I just read the dang book. Anyway, yeah. And this right here, is this... I want to know where this is at.
Yeah, let's play.
The underworld shows no mercy.
Who is that? I don't know.
But it's a great galaxy out there, and I'm gonna risk it all.
Kajimi.
Oh. Space battles. Woo!
Star Wars Outlaws, coming 2024.
What?
Pull up the
Thank you, Kajimi. Pull up the gameplay trailer real quick. Okay. We don't have to watch it all. We can just skip through. I just want to see some of the gameplay parts that they reveal, because it's... I couldn't believe they're already dropping this information. Like, yeah, we already, here's the trailer. Oh, here's some gameplay. Like,
yeah, holy crap, I wonder if that means it's that close. You know what I'm saying?
I don't know. They've got a year. I just hope they perfect it.
I'll say this. Just because someone gives you a gameplay trailer, I would never trust that means we're very close. The biggest culprit that you can find that would, we can talk about this after we show, but I'll tell you a little bit about.
I'm gonna turn it down and just have it playing in the background, so we can see it.
Well, if you remember the, do you happen to remember the EA BioWare game that came out around maybe 2016, 2017, 2018? Anthem.
I thought you were talking about another one, but no, I don't remember that one.
Okay. So Anthem was a big attempt by BioWare. I mean, you know what BioWare is familiar with, you know, famous for, right? You know, Mass Effect, Dragon Age, big single-player RPG adventures. Well, during that time period, toward especially the halfway mark of the 2010s, EA was making a big push toward getting more of their games with multiplayer components, because...
So we get stealth right off the bat.
Oh yeah,
stealth takedowns. Oh yeah, fun. Ooh, A-wing. Keep going. Sorry.
Oh, it's fine. At that time they were pushing more multiplayer components, and even in games that didn't really need them, because for them multiplayer means continued life for a game, and that means continued income for them, because they can continually make DLCs, people to continually keep buying. And they don't really keep putting out single player stories, which are just a one time buy, and you know, that's it. So Anthem was them basically getting BioWare. It's like, you're gonna get in on this multiplayer online stuff. You're gonna make a big online story that's gonna continue. And there were a ton of problems throughout the development of that game, Anthem. Mainly because BioWare was, you know, what their strength was single player storylines and not multiplayer storylines, you know, big MMOs. So they had a lot of problems throughout the thing, and those problems affected other games, notably Mass Effect Andromeda, which was a big failure when it came out.
Also, real quick, Ashley.
Okay. I'm sorry. I was over there on a different screen.
You won, right?
Oh, no, I was just saying Mass Effect Andromeda suffered. You can read about it that it they took a lot of resources from the development of that game, you know, people that were working on that to work on Anthem. And then when Anthem came out, it failed big time. Like, it flopped. And EA finally, I think, and this was a precursor to, I think, the other Star Wars problems that they had. And you can, I mean, this was in that time period that they had the big scandals happen with the Battlefront games.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you remember the first Battlefront, you know, a lot of people were peeved that there was no campaign at all that was added to the Star Wars game. And then there was the even bigger brouhaha that happened with the second Battlefront, which was the big loot box controversy. Yeah, you know, they basically amounted to like gambling, you know.
Oh yeah.
So those got EA with a lot of problems. But the big thing about Anthem, I'm burying the lead here. But the big thing with Anthem was they had a big gameplay trailer to show off like this, to kind of show off what the game's about. And then I found out later on there was a big expose about like what had happened to BioWare over the years. And what happened, that gameplay trailer was just basically a big put together.
Like it was a big demo. Video. And
it's like a big put together. It was basically all you see is all that they could get working literally at that time. Like all that map that you see in that little thing, that's all that they could put together because they were still falling behind on everything. Basically had to call in, some other developer to come in, and he took over as the director, and he was basically saying, you're going to have to finish this. We got to get this working for this, you know, for this show for E3. We're going to have to make it look like it can play. So what you're seeing in this gameplay, in that gameplay, was not indicative of the actual quality of the game because the game wasn't even nearly complete. It was just something that looks close to what they were trying to show off.
Right.
I was just saying that's why I kind of get hesitant, and we can talk about this more after it's done. But yeah,
right now for sure with this though, I will say that like because of the examples you've given, mm-hmm. and the fact that this looks like, I mean, obviously these are only the parts that they probably have completed enough to show you, mm-hmm. but they're big chunks and it looks promising.
Yeah.
And it looks like apparently you can switch from doing stealth. I mean, I bet you it's a do it your own self. Like, you know, however you want to get the mission accomplished, mm-hmm. you probably can tackle missions different ways. You can shoot your way out, sneak your way out. I'm assuming you get a default blaster that you don't run out of ammo with. Right. And it's just a rechargeable, but then you can pick up other weapons. But anyway, you can keep going, Ashley.
Well, so explain this to me. Y'all are more versed in the gamer world than I am. So Star Wars Jedi Survivor, is it not considered an open world game?
It's the way it's because they, first off, it's a newer kind of gameplay where it's like dark, they call it like Dark Souls games. Soulsborne. Yeah, where it's kind of like you're it's more of a challenge game. So that's why, like with Jedi Fallen Order and Survivor, you can beat enemies and stuff, but you know, you have limited amounts of health things. And if you die, you have to start back at a save point and enemies respawn and things like that. It's all because it's all challenging. And the maps are like these open, like not open world, but there's these certain open maps that you kind of open up, you know, you have to explore. Yeah.
And you have to level up to get to other places that you couldn't before.
That you couldn't reach in the map before.
Because
so it's similar. It's similar concepts, but with open world, it's sort of like, I can do this whenever I want. Like you could turn around right now and go to your ship, hop in it and fly to McDonald's if you want right now.
Or you could go to the main boss right at the beginning of the game and die really fast.
Maybe, or it may block you off from doing that, but you could definitely probably go to where he would be.
That's Skyrim open world.
Yeah, or Zelda. That's Zelda open world currently, where you could do that and get your butt handed to you. But no, I mean, it's like then you get elements of this is like playing Tom Clancy's, you know, like Wildlands and Breakpoint. And
Breakpoint, yeah.
Yeah, like these awesome, you know, sandbox games where they're just big open world maps, huge open world maps. And there's so many different ways you can, you know, you traverse it and you do the mission, you know, you just have like weapons and things like that. It's this right here is promising. It looks like obviously you can traverse the landscape. You can ride around on a speeder bike, maybe other things, but it looks like you get at least a speeder bike, which is awesome. Mm-hmm. But yeah, open world, that's what I would consider open world, is when you, it's just sort of like a huge sandbox, and then you slowly just operate through a story that takes place in that world, as in Jedi Fallen Order and Survivor are like, they're similar because they're little sandboxes within a big sandbox, but there's still limitations, and it's almost like skill level things in order to achieve different things.
What's the name of the main planet, the first planet that greet the with the saloon in the town in Survivor?
Kobo.
That I'll say, yes, Kobo has a lot of similarities to a typical open world map. Mm-hmm. But if you think about it, that map is very different from the other maps in the game.
I'd say
Kobo is probably a little bit more closer to what this is going to be than the rest of the game, than the rest of Survivor.
Yeah, to me this looks like it's going to be like playing Uncharted meets Horizon, you know, the Horizon games, mm-hmm. like Zero Dawn and Forbidden West meets No Man's Sky, you know, where you can then hop into a ship and then render a space map, a space, whatever you want to call that, because that's got to be its own processing power, where you go into space, and then I guess you have hyperdrive where you go to another system, and then mm-hmm. that's another map. So it's going to take, I mean, the game is probably yeah. going to really depend on the power of the PS5 for sure, to have all these open worlds.
Yeah.
There's probably going to be what do you think, Ray? Probably four or five planets at the most that you'll be able to go through.
That's a good question. Like that's part of, like, I think when we all texted about it, especially after the gameplay trailer came out, I love everything I see in it, but at the same time, I have to temper myself because it's.
And see, I love that interaction.
I love this.
What you wanted, right? You could do. She just walked away from bribing that damn Imperial agent.
I loved the little detail of her face appearing on the screens, on the holo screens. Did you notice that?
Oh yeah, yeah. And then the GTA is like the GTA levels. No, like, oh no, we're wanted. And then you get to jump in your ship. I'm not huge on the ship design, but I'm cool with it. It's like whatever.
It's very utilitarian. But
why'd they have to go with this? To me, the cockpit is so similar to the Mantis.
Like, I was going to say the whole thing, use workbench. You know, it's like, okay, come on.
Everybody loves a workbench.
See, I love this. But I wonder if you'll be able to switch, at least with the ship. I wish you could switch between first and third person in the ship. Like, see, this in the cockpit view or the third person view?
Yeah. Well, see, this is where I'm wondering how ambitious they're promising right here, because they're promising a lot, you know.
But have you played No Man's Sky?
Yeah, no.
Okay, this is giving me a lot like real heavy No Man's Sky vibes. So if it's my assumption is that they're probably using a similar engine or something to that here when they get to space, or the transitions into space uses similar mechanics.
I'll be surprised if they do that. I mean, well, maybe in terms of space mechanics, but like
just space mechanics. I'm saying because you know they probably all tinker and borrow from everything in terms of the transitions to get to space and do your space stuff seems to borrow a lot from No Man's Sky, which I'm totally fine with. That just means that you know, they definitely got to have space rendering. You'll go to different systems that have like the planets that you can fly to. But there's got to be limited.
Yeah, that, and that's what I'm wondering about, is because the thing about No Man's Sky that's special about that, or you know, the unique about that is so much. I think that entire universe is procedurally generated. You know, that means like stuff, no two people would play the same game, and that's obviously not going to fly with Star Wars, you know, because you know, everything is established, or everything needs to be established. So, you know, if one person goes to this place, the other, everybody else needs to be able to go there and find that exact same thing, because it's all following the same lore and the same canon. But yeah, that's where I'm, that's where my worry comes in a little bit, is because that's a lot that they're going to have to pull off in a game.
And, I was going to tell you, back up real quick, Ashley, I was going to say, you don't have to back all the way out, but yeah, I was going to say, just to when they get to that planet, I was going to, I was going to point it out to you. Did you see what planet they're going to right here?
Does it say?
Yeah, I was going to, if you, I guess if you pop ahead just a little bit to the, when they arrive to the planet. Right here. Well, no, maybe it was a little bit earlier. It was Akiva. I was going to say this right here looks like just everything up to this approach, and then the street right here. I think all that's Akiva. So it looks like you'll get to go there. That's the planet from Star Wars Aftermath, the first book. That's the book takes place around that planet, because all the Imperials gathered there for their big meeting, you know, after Return of the Jedi.
That was Zori Bliss's planet.
Yeah, it's Kajimi.
Yeah, Kajimi. You see, I guess you'll probably have the system of Kajimi, system of Akiva,
Death Star,
where were we at in the very beginning? Well, I wonder what that planet was, the desert looking planet.
Jakku.
See, I was going to say, so there's that planet. Well, I'm just saying, there we go.
That's a little grassy, though.
So we are at least knowing that I think you'll at least go to systems that contain four different open world planets or something like that.
So
that's impressive.
So, but here's where it comes in, because it is open world, but it's going to be limited open world. So I wonder how much control you will get in terms of certain things. Like, I think, you know, obviously, I don't think you're going to be able to land wherever you want. When you go toward a planet, you're probably going to, I think the game will probably take over and bring you to some designated spaceport. Landing.
That's what it sounds like. It looks like.
Because you ride around on the bike to wherever you go, or you walk around. Yeah, you probably can't hop in your ship and then just go land.
Yeah, because because obviously they didn't generate a map of the whole planet. You know, there's only a designated area for you to be able to go around in. So, you know, if you're able to fly all around the planet, you're not going to be doing what you need to do within the game confines. So
I bet when you hit the planet's atmosphere, like if you're flying in, like let's say you're heading towards a planet, I bet when you hit the atmosphere, it probably triggers a cutscene.
Yeah.
Like takes over.
It probably kind of like, what's it called? Yeah. Actually, you know what? Think about it. Star Wars has already had a giant open world game. It had the Skywalker saga, the Lego Skywalker saga. That was very open world.
So was Star Wars Galaxies.
Yeah.
So was the massive multiplayer.
Yes.
Game KOTOR. Star Wars Galaxies.
I mean, not KOTOR. TOR. Yeah. The Old Republic.
This is, I don't know. I just hope it lives up to what it's looking like. It's looking good. So
now, what kind of droid is Indy? Which I thought his name is his name an in joke? Some kind of like.
Because his name is ND5. Yeah, I thought it was like a cross promotion.
But I'm trying to figure out what kind of droid he is, because my wife said he looks like the assassin droids.
Yeah, it looks like an assassin droid.
Jedi Survivor.
Yeah,
I didn't think Clone about Wars. That. Yeah, if you look back at the Clone Wars cartoon, you'll notice.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Okay.
Yeah. It's an old assassin droid, or a commando droid, or something like that.
Yeah. Because, when she pointed that out, I was like, oh, yeah, because it's the kind, you know, the droids that kind of would attack you with the blade, you know, the daggers
and
Survivor. But
all in all, dude, I mean, I'm super hyped for it. I can't wait for it. 2024, this kind of vague, like, end, if I were a betting man.
Yeah, the winter, give it in time for Christmas, next Christmas.
Yeah,
I could see that. And what do you think of what do you think of the design for Kves, our main character? Like, I like I actually like it, and it's I get big Sigourney Weaver, Ellen Ripley vibes from the first Alien movie. I don't know, the hair, yeah. It kind of has that retro vintage look of like it, that
time period. Yeah, it sort of does, but it looks a little newer than that hairstyle to me was like late 80s.
Yeah.
And if you look at Return of the Jedi, you know, that's early 80s. And I know Lucas tried to keep it where it doesn't look like it's of a particular time.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, if you look at the hairstyles of some of the characters, yeah, it does look like, you know,
I like it. I do like it. I have heard that you might be able to customize her a mullet. Little bit. Kind of like you can customize Cal's look in Jedi Survivor.
Yeah.
So obviously you'll have a bunch of videos of people giving her the most ridiculous look possible.
Oh yeah. I imagine. But I mean, it looks fun. I really can't wait.
I do like that little detail of the little smoke steam coming out of the ship as you're running to it.
And even the sand kicking up from the speeders.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, like or that right there. I mean it looks really good.
Mm-hmm.
It's like they really paid attention to like all the little details.
Yeah.
And of course here's probably just a loading screen, even though you don't realize it. You're probably not really controlling this thing.
I think this is probably gonna be computer controlled up until the point when you come out when it actually transitions into the area.
Yeah.
But that makes it the fun thing, the fun possibilities with the Star Wars open world like this is the amount of lore that they can pepper throughout it for Easter eggs and stuff that you can just find. That could be a lot of fun. That could be a ton of fun to find. Like, I just look at all this debris and I just wonder, like, I wonder if you might get a little story, you know, like a little side mission that involves you kind of searching out this wreckage of whatever this is and you find some, you know. It kind of reminds me a little bit of a dead droid control ship.
Man, it's still a little too square. Everything.
Well, it looks like the square sides is in, like, you know, the area where you had to go through the hangars, like where Anakin.
I got you. But it's not. Okay, yeah, look. If you look down, look at where my mouse is.
Mm-hmm.
Like, let me scroll back a little bit. You could be right. Because look out past here, like right in here.
Oh, yeah.
You can kind of see that maybe it was circular right in there, and it's just blown apart. So maybe you're right. Yeah,
because it does look like a giant little hangar bay shape.
Yeah, maybe you're right.
Tunnel. But that, I'm excited for the possibility. I'm trying to temper my expectations because it is very ambitious, all the stuff that they're promising in both the trailer and the gameplay. But if they can deliver, they'll have a winner. I'm also just kind of relieved that we're getting a big Star Wars release that's not under the thumb of EA, because although Fallen Order and Survivor were great, it took so long for us to get to those games, considering, you know, they got that exclusivity contract in
probably 2015,
I think, right after they got bought, right after Lucasfilm got bought by Disney.
Mm-hmm.
They secured that, and it was a 10-year exclusive contract. And then their first two big releases, Battlefront and then Battlefront 2, had such a bad time with all the problems that occurred around them. Much more so the second time around that you know, Disney actually, I think someone with Disney at Lucasfilm actually had to have some talks with EA about how they were handling their IP. And I think that's probably why we got, Fallen Order, which was an exclusive single player game, which at that time was kind of unheard of for EA, because they were going all cylinders on, we need multiplayer, you know, aspects in everything we do.
Yeah.
And there was also the other infamous thing that they had done was there was the Battlefront 2, but there was another game that was being planned. And we've talked about this before, the Visceral Games Star Wars game, Project Ragtag, I believe, made by headed by Amy Hennig from the Uncharted games.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. We talked about that.
Yeah. And that's kind of got, and you can kind of see some of that DNA in this, it feels like, because it was going to be very much like Star Wars Uncharted. So, and that was going to be very single player focused. And then EA ended up scrapping that because it didn't have enough of a multiplayer component for them to justify its existence. So that ended up getting scrapped. And in doing that, they ended up killing that developer altogether, Visceral mm-hmm. Games. So
they killed
yeah, it's yeah, they shut down they, that. Yeah. Oh, I thought you were just in shock. Like,
killed her.
No, I was tall. I was throwing you the ball. I thought you were gonna be like, yeah. They literally held her down and like
shot her,
ended her existence.
That corporate entity.
All right, so let's wrapping this up. I mean, final thoughts.
I'm totally down.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Battle Scars. Down. Outlaws up.
Yeah. Yeah, Battle Scars down, out. Battle Scars bad, Outlaws good.
That being said, go play Survivor. Survivor is a great game.
Yeah, Survivor is a good game. It is a great game. And we'll talk about that. We'll wrap that up next episode, maybe.
Yeah, I was going to say that was a, oh, wow, what a game.
Yeah. All right, We got Halls.
I don't know. What else do you got?
I don't have Halls.
Do you have Halls? Anything else you want to talk about?
No. Nah. Not really.
No, I'll just save it. It's okay. It's fine. But no, I was gonna say I think I have Halls.
Okay, ooh, well go ahead. Do you have anything,
Ray?
No.
Okay, cool. Nope. Well, I think we might have showed this in our other show, but like, yeah. Well, first off, I've got speaking of Fifth Brother from earlier, I was able to get the Fifth Brother Black Series figure from Macy's. Thanks, Macy's.
Does he come with Grease's arm?
No. I wish he did.
He comes so with Vin Diesel he comes with a figure of Vin Diesel saying he's in my family.
Speaking of, I want Black Series figures of that the whole crew, but especially Grease. I want Grease.
Fast and the Furious.
I was gonna say you want the Dom Toretto Black
Series. I'm good.
The family series.
But no, man, I was in I was out of town recently and was able to pick up the Grand Inquisitor.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah, nice. That was the main one I've been looking for. I've been wanting some of these Inquisitors, but the Grand Inquisitor was the main one I wanted just to go with my Rebels figures. Because I've got Thrawn, but obviously he's in the box. You can see him.
Oh, wait, I do have Halls. Thrawn. You keep going.
Yeah, but so I found him, but then also got this little treat at Ollie's, which is awesome because I never saw him anywhere else, but was able to get Saul Guerrera. So he'll throw you and give you to Borgullet. Yeah, I love his mouth thing works too. I mean, he can put it up to his mouth and then because if you want to, you can pull it up.
Like looking at him up close, I can see why they felt justified in making him a deluxe figure
because it looks like every
piece of him is a unique asset. Like they had to make every piece and nothing is symmetrical.
Yeah. Look, even the feet, I mean, he's got some droid foot and then
his sandaled foot.
I mean, it is a lot of pieces on here and then all the stuff. Yeah. I mean, it's crazy. Yeah, even the little hook right here, see, it's just kind of attached in there. I haven't pulled it out or anything, but it's connected in there. And he's fairly hefty. I'm not saying he's big. I still feel like when you pull him out and look at him, he still should just be a regular Black Series figure. But he does he does have like a lot of unique parts on him. But yeah, that was all I had in terms of my hauls. But yeah, I've been trying to grab up Black Series figures. I want to go back and get. There was a Luke Skywalker figure, the one that Ray has. It's the
the robe.
I don't think you showed him. Have you shown? Yeah, I don't think you've showed him on this show. You showed him on the other show, I think.
Oh yeah, yeah. I guess I can. I guess I can call that a haul and show this off. This is a haul.
See, I want that figure. That's awesome. That's the and to specify, that is the Mandalorian Luke Skywalker figure,
yeah.
right?
Like, yeah, this yeah. is the one that saved. Yeah, it's the same one from, you know, it's what he wore in the beginning of Return of the Jedi when he was at Jabba's Hut.
Yeah.
You know, we can do a whole episode on.
He's at Jabba's Hut.
He's at Jabba's Hut.
Yeah.
Shopping low prices.
Jabba's Hut. Now, you know, we could have a whole episode about discussing this design choice because I feel like Lucasfilm is terrified of doing young Luke in anything other than black. I don't know right? why.
Man, yeah. It's a fan favorite. It's a fan favorite.
Is it really?
Yeah,
I think so. I mean, yeah, I could go with other things too. I wish they would try other things. That's why I liked his old suit. Remember when he was old Luke, when he had the old suit? I still want a crate Luke Black Series figure, darn
it. I'm just ready for him to go to something that looks a little bit more normal robing because the black, you know, in Return of the Jedi is kind of supposed to symbolize, you know, his. You know, your worry of Luke of if he's going to fall to the dark side. He's not anymore. We know, so we don't need him in the black. He can wear something a little bit more bright. But man, we can talk about that another day.
But no, I do want that figure because I've seen that out and about. They've got Bays on Amazon for like $9. And I need to grab him. I need to go ahead and pull the trigger on that because I've got Chirrut, but I don't have Bays.
Just pull the trigger,
dude. And I mean, I would consider him a deluxe because he's got that big power pack on the back and the gun. Yeah. So,
all right. So here's my haul. Here's my haul. So I was on the Whatnot app, and I was watching some guy's feed, and I got a little overzealous.
You're watching some guy's feed.
That's what I heard. That's all I heard. That's all I'll hear.
So I got this Action Fleet micro collection.
I loved that set, like that line of toys. The Action Fleet toys, the Micro Machine Action Fleet, were so good.
Yep, I got that. Then I picked this up, which I already have. So now I have an extra.
I think I saw that somewhere.
I didn't realize I picked that up.
I wish I regret not having her in Black Series.
Yep.
Then I picked up the retro car. I mean, this Lando, Return of the Jedi card.
Nice. Yeah, I've been seeing a lot of him at Target.
Yes, he's kind of a
Walmart,
you know, shelf warmer. Then I picked up Axe Wolves.
Ooh.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a good figure. I really like him.
Yep. And I got. Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Tipadon Station.
Yeah.
I need to just break down and get that. I've seen him around. I should just break down and get that.
I'd say, yeah, get that. Or if you want to wait, I can't remember if he's a Hasbro Pulse exclusive or not, but they got the Jabim Obi-Wan coming up soon with the one where it's the robes he wears for the final duel with Vader.
Reissue? Because didn't you already get that one?
Mm-mm. It hasn't come out yet.
Okay. Yeah,
They did Tibbidon Station, and the only ones that have been released so far are Tibbidon Station and Wandering Jedi, which is what he wore for like the first three episodes in that first fight with Vader in the desert.
Okay. That's the one I have is the Wandering Jedi.
So. Yeah. So there's still Jabim, which is, you know, for the final fight with Vader. And then I think they just announced recently that they're going to put out a version of him from the very end, the epilogue where he was with Luke and he has like the white robe with the little cool, like the goggles.
Oh, yeah.
That outfit there. I think
that's coming out. I bet that's a fan favorite for sure.
That is a pretty cool design. That. Yeah. Yeah.
I just wish, like, I want to get Wicket before we go. I just wanted to say I would want to get Wicket the Black Series figure, but I can't justify spending $24 on that tiny little.
Yeah, I know.
I love him. He's got my heart, but I'm like, it ain't fair. I'm on principle alone. I'm like, y'all gotta check yourselves for your record.
Just get him loose, like go on eBay and buy him.
I'm thinking that's what I was thinking about doing is just buying him loose because I'm going to take him out anyways.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, you know, someone needs to write Hasbro and see if they want to do a feasibility study on if they want to buy the copyright licensing to do Fast and Furious figures, and we're gonna call it the family series.
Family series.
Hey, you'd series. Those movies make bank. those figures might sell. Dom with his like shotgun.
They probably would.
They probably would sell like hotcakes.
Come on, BB.
Yeah. That means it's time to end the show.
All right, BB.
God. All right, so that's it for this week's episode, guys. We will see you in 2 weeks for the next episode
of Outer Rim News Show.
Hit that subscribe button if you haven't. If you haven't, hit the subscribe button.
Smash that like button. Smash.
Next week is That Toy Life, so hopefully we'll see you next week. Or in 2 weeks for Star Wars, if you're only a Star Wars fan.
Smash that like
button. Yep, hit that subscribe button. Austin's point, too.
Later, I'm going to take it. I'm going to eat it.
And click that little bell if you want to remember and get a reminder when we're going to start the show.
Smash it.